Thank you for kind words. As has been taught, I will speak on self-censorship and documenting the self using one source, diary of a third Latvian gay man, Kaspars Aleksandrs Sirbe. As you see, born pre-First World War, 1906, and passed away in 1997. There are some documents, around 300 court judgments, as well as several criminal cases in the National Archives of Latvia that document surveillance practices related to the policing of male homosexuality in Soviet Latvia. However, there is little that could help to construct homosexualities as practices, revealing the development of homosexual subjectivities and the voices of homosexuals that have not been distorted by the power discourse. The research of such questions usually is based on the sources of the life writing. In 2016, 3 years ago, a private owner made available to me a journal written by a Latvian queer man, Kaspars Aleksandrs Sirbe. As a piece of a documented individual memory that documents also communicative memory, it has a potential for queering the Latvian collective memory. The diary was regularly written for 55 years, from 1940 to 1996. Entries on the late 20s and 30s have been destroyed by himself, but nevertheless, he has kept some from mostly the late 30s. The diary consists of 77 volumes, and it took for me 18 months to read it. Irbe was born in one of the Baltic provinces of the Russian Empire in the 1906. His formative years took place in the independent Republic of Latvia in the 20s and 30s. Like other countries cited in the secret protocols of the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact of 1939, Latvia was absorbed into the USSR in 1940. After the Soviet Union won the Second World War, Latvia was once again a part of the Soviet Empire. In 1940, when the army of the Soviet Union occupied Latvia, Irbe was 34. He felt favorably towards the Soviet Union. However, what he observed in the Soviet times made him become a nationalist. Irbe fully enjoyed his homosexuality through the Soviet and the Nazi occupations during the Second World War, to the Stalinist period, and through the whole late Soviet period. He passed away in the re-established independent Latvia in the age of 89. Irbe's main objective was to write about his romantic adventures so that it would be easier to remember them in his old age. He wrote not only about his own experiences, but has made splendid entries on the Soviet everyday life, as well as on observation of different sexualities visible in public space, focusing on the local life in Jūrmala, where he lived. Jūrmala is the city on the Baltic Sea beach that was very famous among the population of USSR for its numerous sanatoriums and for the image of Latvia in general, especially its capital city Riga as the Soviet West. And as well, he made observations of different sexualities visible in public spaces in Riga, the capital city of Latvia, where he worked mostly as a bailiff in the people's court. He has documented the entire Soviet period when male homosexuality was criminalized in Latvia. Thus, the frankness of the author of diary becomes an issue that is worth of understanding. How does the self-censorship manifest itself in Irbe's diary? It is the issue that I will try briefly address in my presentation today. I would like to start answering the question, was the diary meant to be read by other people? In other words, to whom did he write? His initial intention was to write for himself, to be able, as I told, to remember the times past. However, from the late 60s, the entries reveal his imaginings and fantasies about the ideal reader of his diary. It would not, quote, it would not be a pity if my entries once would be read by a smart human being with sensitive soul when I will not be there anymore. Or into what hands can these notes fall after the end of journey of my life? It would be sensitive human being of broad education, when I would not have any objections, so that he looks into the life and the soul of another person. And finally, he knows, I gladly would like to give my notes to some capable writer or scholar psychologist. The self-censorship of Irbe was determined by the historical reality. As I already told, male homosexuality was criminalized both in independent interwar Latvia and in the Soviet Latvia. The rigidity of the Soviet political regime changed over the times, and it had an impact on the level of the self-censorship of Irbe. Nevertheless, the most cautious time in regards to writing of his romantic adventures was the Nazi occupation period in the Second World War. And here you see an example from the 1944 showing his caution. In the dark, I met a beautiful young German officer with a large tool. He was also very passionate. He had a short, strong build, a wedding ring on his finger. He passionately uttered, "Du bist schön, you are beautiful." Later, I got acquainted with another guy, also very passionate, small. Later, we sat on the bench. He told me of Vienna. The most splendid entries have been written during Stalinist era, and they are due to various reasons. For example, exactly in that severe Stalinist time, he fell in love twice, hardly. And it also was the 40s and 50s was the most active period sexually in his life. And here I will I'm giving example from the severe Stalinist time, and written on 24th August 1950. I slept in a pose, like a nymph on the shore of the sea. In the distance, I saw someone in white swimsuit triangle swimming. Having seen me, he moved closer, jumping around and waving a white small sheet. He turned out to be a young faun, probably an aspiring ballet dancer, dark, fiery, very tanned, with a beautiful figure, about 18 years old, but already corrupted because he immediately recognized the nymph in me and hinted at me with his eyes. I followed him behind the dunes into the beautiful groves intended for Venus and Amor. As you see, he used terms from mythology of ancient Greece and Rome, a nymph, a faun, priest, priestess, pilgrim of love, to designate homosexuals. When defining himself, Irbe has not used the term homosexual or any analog of it. His belonging to homosexuals can be understood from the texts where he has written about the identifications of others. Interwar concept Tante was used by him mainly during the Nazi occupation. It was popular in interwar Latvia too. In the 40s and 50s, he mostly uses also the term homosexuals and such metaphors as our circles, our direction, our kind of people, etc. To give a hint on sexual acts and places where they took place, he used terms temple, mausoleum, altar, orgy, cult dedicated to Roman goddesses, Venus and Vesta, Ama, the son of Venus, and Phrygian Magna Mater Cybeles. Thus, the cruising sites also could be regarded as ciphered for the reader in the 21st century. I guess that Irbe's intention was not to encrypt, but simply to tell a romantic story. He viewed him as a romantic person. That means to use a poetic language. In the 40s and 50s, while describing his observations that could be compromising, he indicated the same-sex loving man in female gender. Latvian is a gendered language. Both verbs and nouns have endings that signal the male or female gender. Or he used gender-neutral nouns. Irbe himself was known among his generation as Cleopatra and Mermaid the Sea Rose. Irbe has identified his sexual contacts only according to outer appearances, most often according to their ethnic origins, place of residence, or affiliation to various institutions of Soviet authorities, whose employees can be differentiated by their uniforms, military, state security institutions, railway institutions, where they are documented in short phrases. For example, quote, I flirted with a KGB officer. I met a charming young aviator. Some say that I have a boyfriend, a general. Also, the representatives of ethnic groups have been mentioned, for example, colleagues from Leningrad, the young Russian, the blonde Russian, the black colleague referring to the men from the so-called sovereign republics of the Soviet Union, etc. Here you see entry from 1956, I'm quote, a young guy with black eyes started to flirt. He said that he had a weird nationality, Magadan. I don't know whether from Tundra or the South. One can see all kinds of nationalities today. He wanted to make contact very much. He used also not to write the endings of words, also to avoid the presentation of the gender of the observed person. From the 60s, alongside with the liberalization of the political regime, he corrected the endings from female to male gender while rereading his journal. In his old age, he also specified the real names of a few men under the aliases for the future readers to be able to understand. Irbe used to omit the words in one occasion, namely he used four dots to indicate the happening of a sexual act. He used to reflect also on the frankness of his entries. Quote from 1968, there are plenty of observations. It is impossible to make notes over that all. It is not desirable, also due to the known reasons. In his old age, he specified that it was due to the Cheka, KGB. Or, quote from 1969, I would wish to give the right picture about the times past. However, I write very carefully, cautiously, silencing a lot and not reflecting completely. I will characterize this silencing with an example on the cultural misunderstandings between Irbe and homosexuals of other ethnicities, namely the migrants from other socialist republics of the USSR. Irbe named them barbaric incomers. The most outstanding is the episode in 1945, already after the end of Second World War, which Irbe had explained only 50 years later. It manifests the level of caution or self-censorship which he adhered to. It's a quote from 1945. In the evening, a brutal officer spoke to me near the Vesta Temple. I talked to Queen of Uokstini. We wanted to become acquainted with a handsome soldier. The brutal officer told me, Молоденькая артистка, young actress, he wanted to come with me home and used filthy language. Irbe remembers this episode twice in the mid-90s and clarifies what exactly was meant by a filthy language. Here the quote from 1995. On the benches at the end of Rhine's Boulevard, there were many lonely men. While I was sitting there, I saw a Russian army major of mighty bodybuilding with many medals on his chest. He examined the men who were sitting on the benches. Finally, he stopped at me and without any introduction asked, do you give a butt fuck? I want a butt fuck. I was shocked and got up to leave. I crossed the street to go to the station, but the major started to curse. You gave a bad fact to fascists, but you don't give the bad fact to the Soviet officer, etc. From the 60s, he again and again remembers the murders and violence committed by the Soviet army in 1940s against the civilian population of Latvia, and gives more detailed descriptions than in the time when they actually happened. He makes entries on events that he skipped to mention at all during Stalinist period and the early years of Khrushchev's rule. For example, in the 70s, he describes how in around 1956 he and his colleague were assigned to burn the criminal files on the sentenced people who changed job without the authorities' permission in order none of these files could get abroad. There was the system of forced labor in the USSR by the early 50s, etc., etc. To sum up, the self-censorship of Irbe in relation to the critical assessment of the political regime started to soften from the 1960s. However, the self-censorship of Irbe in regards to the written self-reflection on sexuality, namely on the written representations of his sexual relationships / contacts over the whole Soviet period, changed only a little. It stayed splendid. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and our presentation will be further exploration of the archive of IRBE, and as our colleague Dan Healy said, that actually you need a whole institute to do proper research on IRBE's archive because it's so rich and so fascinating. And we are approaching to this, so one more presentation about IRBE and another guy from that period. Actor Jānis Veinalds committed suicide by jumping out of the window of the sixth floor in Blaumanis Street, Riga city center. He died on the spot, leaving behind him his young wife and their small child. As newspapers told their readers, Veinalds entered the apartment of his friend Wachers in the middle of the night and after a short quarrel threw himself out of the window. Such a desperate move was explained by the fact that Veinalds was heavily drinking that night, as well as by his weak nerves and his previous suicidal inclinations. Veinalds' friend Karlis Aleksandrs IRBE, as you heard before, was about the same age as him. However, IRBE's life was three times longer than his. IRBE was not a public person. He worked in various professions and was a part of the underground urban gay circles, which attended the meeting places in Riga City and Jūrmala Seaside Resort. For many decades, IRBE kept his diary. And thanks to our friend and colleague, historian Inete Lipše, we had possibility to access IRBE's diaries and other materials from his archive. And today we are going to speak just to map other materials from this archive. Veinalds was one of IRBE's friends. IRBE mentioned Veinalds in his diary on several occasions. However, during his lifetime, he was cautious enough not to call things as they were. It was only in the early 90s when he added a single word in his handwriting to the passage dedicated to Veinalds, and this word was homo.
We are interested in Veinalts and Irbe as two bright examples of the queer subjectivity who have left after themselves their archives, which give us some ideas how the queer population in Latvia lived in the first half of the 20th century, and to what extent it is possible to speak about Latvian queer subculture with its own norms of behavior, cultural production, as well as tactics of everyday life, as Michel Desserteau has pointed out in the practice of everyday life, and you see the quote. Many everyday practices are tactical in character, and so are more generally many ways of operating. Victories of the weak over the strong, clever tricks, knowing how to get away with things, hunters, cunning maneuvers, polymorphic simulations, joyful discoveries, poetic as well as warlike. Male homosexual relations were criminalized throughout almost the 20th century. In this situation, both of our heroes had to be careful and composed in their love affairs, constantly censoring their behavior and looking for the safest way how to live as full life as possible without getting arrested and imprisoned. Analyzing the materials of their archives, we want to ask how their queer sensibility influenced their life choice, their careers and hobbies, as well as what were the common cultural and artistic practices of the time associated with queerness.
What we can learn from Irbe's detailed diary and Veinalts' over-emotional poems is the presence of queer space in the Riga city center. Queers were walking the same streets, meeting at the same cafes as other people. However, they viewed the urban space through another filter, constantly looking for signs which enabled them to find and meet other queer men. As Sara Ahmed has stated in The Cultural Politics of Emotion, sexual orientation involves bodies that leak into worlds. It involves a way of orientating the body towards and away from others, which affects how one can enter different kinds of social spaces, which presumes certain bodies, certain directions, certain ways of loving and living, even if it does not lead bodies to the same places. Unquote. As their archives show, both Irbe and Veinalts was aware of the performative side of their existence. In their daily life, they had to perform their social role, conforming to the heteronormative majority, while in their private life, they transgressed this role. Irbe always depicts his encounters with strangers and his queer friends as risky and exciting plunges into a parallel world, while after returning to his house, he always praised its safe peace, warmth, and tidiness.
Many decades after the time of their youth, archives of Irbe and Veinalts can be useful to create what Ant Cvetkovic has named an archive of feelings. And here's the quote, forged around sexuality and intimacy and hence forms of privacy and invisibility that are both chosen and enforced, gay and lesbian cultures often leave ephemeral and unusual traces. In the absence of institutionalized documentation or in opposition to official histories, memory becomes a valuable historical resource. And ephemeral and personal collections of objects stand alongside the documents of the domain culture in order to offer alternative modes of knowledge. Using the archives of both Irbe and Veinalts as sites of reconstruction of their sensibility and feelings goes against the normative version of Latvian modern history where queerness is still absent.
An important attempt of such reconstruction of feelings is a theatre performance, Normal Life of the Soviet Citizen Kaspars Irbe, based on the material written by the Latvian playwright Matijs Gricmanis. The production of his play was staged at the Lithuanian National Drama Theatre by the Latvian director Walter Sielis in 2018. Besides the experiences of Irbe, it focused also on a contemporary protagonist who immersed himself into Irbe's life story and created his own emotional responses to it.
An interesting example of queer archive is Irbe's collection of newspaper clippings of poems that has survived from the 30s. It consists of approximately 50 poems which address mostly the issues of love, dreaming and longing. Among them are a couple of poems with more pronounced heterosexual eroticism. Irbe was attracted to mostly neoromantic type of poetry written by his contemporaries, Latvian poets Rūta Skujiņa, Kārlis Studens and Jānis Grots. Other poets are represented by one or two poems. Among them, there is also a translated poem written by the German poet Hans Benzmann. Latvian romantic poet Jan Akurāters was important for both Irbe and Valens. The first one included two of Akurāters' poems in his collection, while the other kept the copies of Akurāters' poems in his archives together with his own poems, thus misleading the editors of his posthumous collection of poems, where one verse from a poem by Akurāters was mistakenly included as a poem by Veinalds. Such collections of cuttings and scrapbooks were a common cultural practice in the European culture of the 19th and 20th century, when the mass-produced magazines and newspapers were easy, accessible, and it became possible to just cut out their content instead of writing the text down, as in the tradition of commonplace books. Such scrapbooks allowed to make one's independent collections of artifacts to celebrate the work of particular authors or subjects, as well as to act as editor who could make his own selection of poems who spoke to his sensibility.
Among these mainstream poems, Irbe's archive contains also some gay erotica. There is an anonymous pornographic ABC poem in his archive which seems to be used by the Latvian gay circles for just amazement and probably arousal. Each couplet consists of two different lines. The first one tells some natural information, while the second one is sexually charged and naughty. For example, Ceļmalā ziet skaistas puķes, celkas glabā jaunas skuķes. If you know Russian, then you know what is celka. In English, it would be beautiful flowers bloom on the roadside. Young girls are guarding their hymens. In a way, this poem reflects on how the whole queer subculture is making use of the mainstream cultural production and adding to it some more private elements, thus spicing it up.
Irbe's archive contains also some undated pornographic drawings, most likely drawn by his friends for private use. Some of those drawings show male penises flying around like birds and entering asses without being attached to bodies. If compared with the content of Irbe's diaries, those symbolic penises speak of the physicality of Irbe's desires. He did not try to establish long-time relationship instead of engaging in casual sex when the opportunity arose.
And now about the other guy, Jānis Veinalds. Besides his acting career in Dailes Theatre in Riga, Veinalds wrote poems. They have survived in his album of poems in his handwriting, the anthology of young poets Ziedoša Doma, and his posthumous collection of poems Atmiņu Pīpe. Veinalds' poems are considered to be an amateur poetry with no great artistic value. He entered a literary studio for young poets. However, he found himself among other amateurs whose creative work never won any recognition. Critics attacked his poetry for going in a totally wrong direction, and the editors of his posthumous volume were reprimanded for including some of his poems who had been born with an unnatural face distorted by despair. The situation of an amateur poet with a limited visibility permitted Veinalds to write about his passions in his poems, including his homosexual experiences. He sometimes wrote from a woman's perspective and addressed his poems both to male and female objects of desire. His interest in his position as an actor should also be taken into account. So his poems are articulating life as a performance, and the voice of those poems often identifies himself with Arlequin, whose life is happening in front of the audience, so it is impossible to tell when he is acting and when not. as well as if he still has something inside him that could be called the true self.
Unlike Weinald's Rhine poems, his attempts at Verlieber are mostly emotional outbursts, which seem to his contemporary just raw material for poetry rather than finished poems. However, in these poems, his emotions are the most direct. They resemble the entries of a diary, and their mood is always over-emotional, confession in love, sin, and despair. Possibly this is as close to the archive of feelings we can get. However, in such poems, Weinalds writes only about a limited scope of his experiences, and what hides beyond these rather abstract passions, sins, and despair is always left outside the poems.
Weinalds was a handsome man, and he loved to take care of his looks. In tabloids, his choice of clothes was discussed on several occasions, and he had admirers among young women. He always accentuated his thick, arched eyebrows, modeled after the Italian actress Eleonora D'Uzza. And as it can be seen from many postcards with his portraits, he loved to pose a lot. He gave those postcards to his friends, writing on them some aphorisms, as you can see on. Usually their content was the shortness and fragility of life, as well as encouragements to give oneself to pleasures.
There are both many pictures and poems left by Weinalds. They are stored by the Museum of Writing and Music in Riga, as well as Latvian National Library. His physical appearance in the pictures seems to be self-confident and happy, and it forms a sharp contrast with his poems that provides insight in his tormented and over-emotional personality. His psychic instability that can be read as coming from his life as a queer person and amplified in the homophobic years of the authoritarianism in Irbe's memories was recalled as sometimes staged. For example, they met at the military hospital as two young and fragile men who both wanted to shorten their military service. Successfully, they succeeded in presenting themselves psychically unstable persons to the committee of doctors, and their service ended. To what extent Weinalds played with his psychic instability on other occasions, including his suicidal attempts, is unknown.
And to conclude, we would like to ask you a question. What is the most authentic kind of queer experiences that we can use as an archive to understand something about their lives? Because there are several categories of materials. Not all of them are equally accessible, and not all of them are equally trustable. So, I mean, is police protocol of interrogation something more trustable than private letter or diary or poem? It's very hard to say. And what we find fascinating in both Irbe's and Weinalds' archives is the multitude of different kind of materials and this constant being between the public and private, the official and underground, and the interplay between those categories. So these archives let us see that there was an established Latvian queer subculture in the 1930s, and especially Irbe is as a like a spider in a huge spider web, and his threads are going to all possible directions. So, and as further we go in this web, the more fascinating we are. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Regarding your a commentary on the treatment of homosexuals or the treatment of Jews? How was the sexual acts with Nazi officers understood in terms of military conquest?
Nazi occupation in Riga, and he left a few notes, and his hate was based on the reality that, for example, he has a friend, his alias was the White Sister, he was very close to him, and this White Sister, he was very socially active, also in queer subculture active, and during a Nazi occupation, there is mention that at the beginning of 1933, there was a big drag ball, participated 60 persons, 60 male, cross-dressing ball. And after that ball, all of these persons were arrested and sentenced to forced labor. For example, his friend, the White Sister, he was sentenced for 18 months. And another guy for 6 months, and so on. And it was one reason why he was not—he didn't appreciate German Nazi occupation. And the second, and it was because of that. And the second, of course, there was the constant threat of being mobilized in a Nazi army. In the early 1943, 1944, the Latvians were a kind of voluntary, it wasn't voluntary mobilization, but it was forced, and he tried to escape in various reasons, and it was also the reason why he didn't appreciate Nazi power. And in his notes, he writes that in several entries that somebody told him, some of his acquaintances, queer acquaintances, that, for example, if Latvian queer persons, Latvian queers, they are sentenced to forced labor, but to German officers, they are sentenced to death, if we can trust him. But I think that we can, because I have verified very different entries where he gives the facts, and all they can be trusted. And yes, but there are also entries where he has a kind of hint that he talks of some German soldiers, and he concludes that yes, that these German soldiers said that here in Latvia, in Riga, in occupied Riga, for example, it was easier for them to engage in these queer sexual contacts. You know, twofold. From one side, you have a death penalty, at least for two officers, and from the other side, there are soldiers who fought that. In occupied Riga, they have more liberated attitudes towards their sexual needs and sexual behavior.
Any reflection on the social situation of Jews at the time? Is there any reflection of a parallel existence between queers and Jews?
There is no any reflection on parallel between homosexuals and Jews. But there are several entries. Shortly writes that I saw a Jewish women, they are forced to do hard work on the streets and so on, but he doesn't reflect on that. He reflects on that after the war, already after the war, because as I told, exactly the Nazi occupation period was the most kind of severe period in all that his life story. And he avoids writing about that. And in the 50s, mostly in the 60s, in some several times, he had conversation, for example, with one neighbor who used to live near the place in Bitternit, in Riga, where happened to be mass murders of Jews. And she told him, remembering that time, that exactly for that reason, she moved from Bitternit to the described how the people got shot and so on, but he had no reflection at all. No reflection at all as regards to Nazi occupation time about that oppression of homosexual people. There are plenty of entries that suggest that he had sexual contacts and all happened and so on, but there are no they are not such splendid as the entries from Soviet period, but they are cruising sites, they are German officers and soldiers visited, and you have to simply go to that garden and or city park and you could have a relationship there. It's a kind of double. From one side you have oppression, from the other there is so in blood.
Thank you. There's another question. Thank you very much for your presentation about the Ukrainian and Soviet pop and visual culture. I was always struck by the contrast between somehow very open and very queer or very transgender pop performance that we have on television in Central and Eastern Europe and the political reality, especially in Russia and in Ukraine, which is quite harsh. And when it comes to gay and lesbian art in Ukraine and exhibitions of this kind of art, quite often they were censored and attacked by the neo-Nazi. And probably the most famous case is Evgenia Bielorusev's photographs, or very simple photographs of same-sex couples in their regular homes in many Ukrainian cities, an exhibition that was incredibly difficult to organize and to show even in alternative art centers run by foreign foundations. So how would you comment the discrepancy, the contrast between Vera Serbushka, who is of course wonderful, and at the same time the harsh reality of very simple queer art in Ukraine?
Yeah, thank you for the question.
Thank you for question. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, you are completely right when you said about contrast, because queer in art, in television, in some shows, in concerts, even in discotheques, are very popular in Ukraine, but Ukraine is a big country, and I can say about all Ukraine. I said about official and very famous shows, and really, if we count these shows, maybe 5 or 6 or 7, and Verka Serdyuchka is very, not only queer artist, but very infused artist and very talented artist and famous not only Ukraine, in Russia and Belarus, in Europe, everywhere. And in same time, we have pressing on life of queer communities, homosexual communities, but in some situation it depends on region and city. For example, I live in Kharkiv, and Kharkiv is very multinational and very tolerant city. And in beginning I said that my university was the first, really, in first in all Ukraine, who started to teach gender courses. So it was impossible in my case, in case of my university, even because we had traditions of strong women's movement, even from 19th century. From 19th century, three main most tolerant and open cities were Kharkiv, Odessa, in some level Kyiv. And these traditions of more openness, more tolerant, more liberal attitude to different people from different sexual subjectivity and even national subjectivity were in this city. So it was impossible, especially in Kharkiv academia and in art. I think that in many other cities and even more in small provincial towns, in villages, it was much more difficult and prohibited, and many homosexual people, both men and women, moved to big cities or even abroad to have sexual, human, professional realization because it's more easier abroad or in big cities. And different situation on political proclamation in Ukraine, because all people have equal rights, and that is why we have opportunity, especially in my city, to teach. And I know many students who have interest to gender, to queer, to feminist studies, and even I had diploma students who wanted to write about it, to collect it material, and to present some papers on the conference. If you to go more Western regions, maybe it would be not so popular, and some people prefer to study maybe history of Ukrainian tradition, more national history, than contemporary gender issue or queer issue or something other. And on level of activism, it's completely difficult situation, because it's possible on a level of personal connections, like personal life. But for example, maybe you know, 1 week or 2 weeks ago, there was a gay pride in Kyiv, and there were some problems with police. Some policemen follow this gay pride, but some activists with nationalistic orientation or some strong religious orientation wanted to make some problems with gay pride. So situation really is situation not very good. We can't say that everything is equal. But I wanted to present that it's interesting phenomena that liberalization in post-Soviet culture, it seems to me, we are developing from not everyday culture, but from higher, from top culture. And liberalization became now more on higher level of culture, on level of elite, academic elite, artistic elite, scientific elite, political elite, than on everyday consciousness. But maybe in any country, liberalize of everyday consciousness is more difficult, because it's more traditional consciousness than on level of elite, which can be more open, maybe tolerant, and more included in transnational ideas than everyday society. I think it's my response.
Resembling to how in Hungarian, like mainstream comedy shows. show sometimes like older men dressed up as women but were just characters, which is not actually about like gender bending or fear at all. It's more about like how they are usually portraying women of like of age or undereducated village people, which is not even about the gender bending. It's more about like these women are not really women because they are not fitting the stereotypes of like the desired women image or something.
Yeah, thank you. I need to respond because it's a very interesting situation. I need to say that in first image of Verka Serdyuchka was developing during 20 years. It's not stable image during 1990s and 10, 15 years ago and now. Maybe in first time, maybe. It was a kind of experiment with cross-dressing, but after it, I think Andrei Danilka is more complicated and more talented artist that make only to make only easy goals to be funny, to be grotesque for everybody, provincial. Really, it was scandalous. Fuga in beginning, audience in Ukraine, in Russia, well, was scandalized. It's horrible. It's something. But after year and year, it was very interesting. And now he is very popular artist. So it cannot be see only on one level and only one goal. I think any talent can be more multi-goal and can be seen on different levels, different realizations. It's a kind of emancipation of society, but after many years of his end, I think if some artist can be popular in stage during 20 years and more, he is very talented, really talented. It's an interesting question, and it's a philosophical question. Maybe... popular culture is a kind of philosophy also, because we have philosophy of popular culture. It can be a different situation in different shows, because Andrei Danilka can be in different presentation, in different show. It can be, of course, irony with provincial women first. It can be irony with men who didn't like women, irony towards too rigorous and too religious men who prefer to press on women. It's our situation, our show, because he had many works in this area. And it can be celebration of drag queen show and cross-dressing like something beautiful. And this is very emancipatory work. And it can be many different goals which can be decided to present in different situation. And I said about development, about evolution of Verka Serdyuchka in different years. It's interesting because she is very actual to moment, very responsible to situation and can be different and even he can make response to political or cultural or any public situation. So we can't make him in some very strong and certain frames, only this, because it's a kind of development, maybe alone with Ukrainian culture and Ukrainian consciousness, maybe.
Okay. There is another, the person with the red, blue, Sure.
Okay, thank you.
And I would like to say that I want to include Karis and Yanis into the discussion, and I would like to remember on their question they asked after their presentation, but please ask your question.
Thank you very much. My name is Karen. I'm from Galashka Zimokotekar from Moscow. So I would like to, if you try to show, if you try to see in what kind of shows Verko was involved, it is shows which were shown at the TV, and it's mostly about the audience after 40 years old. Some kind of these shows is not about queer. It's about this idea of the 40 years old woman, which is not really pleasant. She's always like hessy. And I'm not really sure it's about the queer culture and any post-tracing game or something like this. It is more or less, I think, more connected to the idea of the Russian or, let's say, post-Soviet female figure, which is not really pleasant, not really beautiful, and it always, so more or less, I think it's more connected to this idea, not the queer, not the queerness, and not the queer, specific queer Russian, but specifically to female figure after 40 years old. And if you try to see, it's really popular among all of these audience after 40s. And it's still popular among these audience, even if we, even if you browse in the queer parties around Moscow, and you will hear Verka, but it's it seems like more or less like joke or something like this. It's not the key figure for queer scene right now, and it wasn't.
Maybe you can really go to Karlis and Yanis and their question. So, because I think this was a kind of statement, it only says that Verka Sadutschka is so popular that a lot of meanings and a lot of views on him and on his art is possible, which is really quite interesting for Eastern Europe. And now I would like to remember the question you both had at the end of your presentation. And the question had been, when I'm repeating it right, which sort of source is good to show authentic gay life? Was this your kind of question?
Yeah, more or less.
In a shortened way? So what do you think, which kind of source would be helpful to show authentic gay and lesbian and trans life? And if there is no answer from the audience, maybe you can give an answer.
Because as a historian, I would say that you have to compare all the sources you could have, all of them, and only in such a way you could get an idea on the person, you know. Let's say comparing is the most important.
Okay, there is one other question.
I have no question. I would like to add something to your question related to the 20th generation.
Yeah.
I think that you should use all the sources that you can gather. Yeah. Everything. You have to have a plural approach. So these are legal sources, journals, visual culture, the historical context. You just have to use everything that you have, especially when it comes to the historical materials and 19th, 20th, 18th century. You just collect intersectional and interdisciplinary materials and then to pinpoint your object of research. So use everything that you can find. This would be my answer.
There are two other answers.
Who's first?
You are the first.
Yeah, and as an artist, just to add that maybe the question is also how to treat the sources, like which way am I looking at them, and it's which way, do I show them on PowerPoints, do I have a speech about it, do I write a book about it, or is there some other, like, for example, the visual material that I would be interested in what you show, and what's the, how to work them, that they become part of the history without asking too much about more or less authenticity of this or that document.
least a part of this diary, because it's really fascinating what he wrote in the 1940s. Of course, we are using it as a historical source, and of course we compare it with other data, other sources, and yeah, he's mentioning, he's dropping names, and each of these names can lead to something else. Like he mentioned Weinalls, and we started to do research on Weinalls, and we discovered his life story, which is interesting in its own terms. Yeah, so yeah, many ways how to.
And in the same time, the research could be done like not only in an academic way, it can be done artistically. So this is why we show this theatre performance, and this is the way how to explore as well, because of course nowadays all the artists do the research to make an art from that as well. So academic way is just only one, of course, of the possible choices.
Yeah, and actually it's a political thing to show that Latvian history was also queer, because Latvian mainstream history is constructed as good old times when everybody was white, peasant, rural, heterosexual, and speaking Latvian and singing folk songs and dancing folk dances. And sources like this show that it was not like that. It was like multilingual, politically divided, and then of course sexually divided.
I have three other questions, and then I would like to close because there will be lunch time. But first, Lee, first of all.
Yeah, I had a question for Tavio, maybe also in
Sorry. Yes. I just wanted to quickly ask what the value of sources like police reports that you mentioned, because often, obviously, with official documents like from authoritative figures, like LGBT people can be very misrepresented. So do you think that it is important to include them as part of a historical documentation, or are they too biased against LGBT people? Police reports, for example.
It depends simply on the topic you are studying. For example, if you would like to know and you have to research, for example, governmental policies towards homosexuals, male homosexuals, in Soviet period, you have to look at these criminal files. And of course, you have always in mind what is your intention, what are you looking for, but who created that source and for what reasons it was created and so on. And that, with that critical approach, you can use whatever you want to use. And I guess that criminal files are very important source regarding, at least we can count how many men they are persecuted, because it is knowledge that is unknown still in Latvia, because there are no publications. We are now only engaging in that research. Yeah, it will be published in the recent years, but it is very, very important also these documents produced by authorities, of course. But you can't find their homosexual subjectivity.
There was a question of the person at that
way. I'm really interested in your question as well. I'm doing research on Poland, kind of also occupied cities, the most homosexuals in those cities. I think one of the elements of your question was the authenticity thing, right? So how you kind of treat things differently. And the thing that I kind of tried to do in my own research, and that actually was brought up, I'm sorry about your presentation about the Malibu fires yesterday, was the kind of Foucauldian way that you can do like archaeology in the one sense where you're pulling up individual things and then just sort of looking at them out of accepting that ephemeral weakness almost, and just turning that weakness into a strength by saying, okay, it's not as attractive, but it has this really interesting life that can become part of the spring. So I think that's a cool way of kind of fighting that weakness as I further scare goes.
Thank you. There is a person in the white shirt, and then there is Jean, it's last one.
I just wanted a brief comment on that. And I remember about 20 years ago, there was a documentary at the Berlin Film Festival on Christopher, Franklin Crisp in New York. And the person who had done this documentary, followed him all through New York, said that he discovered in sort of this whole thing that the depth was in the surface. I thought that was very interesting, because a person who is performing and part of what they see themselves as performing, and even to this point of the diary, at some point he realizes this might be read, it seems to me that's part of the story, is that what point is it to turn into a performance, and how are we supposed to capture the performance? So that when we use the word authenticity, well, what does that mean? That has a sense of some core we have to get to. It seems like the combination of all these great things, and genealogy, it seems like that's the putting together of it.
Thank you. And Gene, as last one, please.
Okay. Well, thank you. And my question is kind of for everyone. Thank you. And my question is kind of for everyone. And I'm interested in not only in your work, but in the work you did with other individuals or genres. The late Igor Kahn, did you feel that he treated you fairly and your research fairly? Or did you feel that his work was indeed too colored by his participation as the senior person in the Soviet Union that studied GOBT issues?
I have very deep respect for Igor Kahn. I think we saw him at a conference in Riga in 2010. Yeah, and I think it's absolutely fantastic that he wrote all those books about Russia's LGBT heritage. But I mean, now I'm spoiled with queer theory and affect theory and all those contemporary approaches. So I think we should always find new ways how to rethink the history, including queer history. So we can build on what Igor Kahn has already done, but still we need to find our own ways how to see things, and we cannot also just copy paste what American or British theorists write about, because as you can see also in this case with the Verka Serdiuchka, attitudes and tropes and everything, it's like different in each region, and Eastern Europe is like special in that way that you don't have those like established identities, social activism in the same way as in the West. So yeah, it's still a challenge for our region to find our own voice, our own theory, a way how to speak about it.
I could add that I view Igor Kahn as, you know, as founding father of history of homosexuality in the USSR. Regards to USSR, but I have published my work. He already passed. No, wasn't among alive people, and I have not discussed, for example, my findings with him. I admire Dan Healy, historian, British historian, who publishes on previous USSR and then Russian Empire on history of homosexuality. And as Carlos told, yeah, we are looking for different approaches, and we are in position that we can try everything what we want, because we are the only ones in Latvia, for example.
Yeah, but I mean, this is very important to have the own theory things, let's call it like that, and not copy-paste, as Carlos told, the American version. Of course, this is like one of the streams. You just read something you have already done. But the Central Eastern Europe, we have our own issues, and yes, discussion showed that, and there's a lot of interesting views, and in a sense of Ineta's discovery of this diary, I mean, this is not about Latvia only, and for example, the Soviet period. This gives a broader sense of the Soviet period. I mean, not only the one republic, but I mean the whole story, because he had the contacts as well, and so we just stream some other things as well and find out some new aspects. As Dan Healy told us, you can build an institute on this diary. It's really like that. It's very huge. It's very huge.
I had opportunity to know Ihar Kon personally, and I had several meetings with him in the USA, in Washington, D.C., in Moscow, and he came to Kharkiv he gave lecture in my university many times, and he presented me several books about sexuality in Russia, and People of Blue Moon, about homosexuality in Russian history. And I did references for his works, early works about young homosexuality between youth and later. And I think he was first brave, very brave, very active, very special person who opened this issue even in Soviet Union, because he started to write about sexuality and homosexuality maybe since 70s or 80s, and it was completely new, and we think here and in West that it was easier for Ihar Kon because he was academician, he was professor, he was very famous, popular, he was very lovely person. Many people loved Kon, but in reality, I remember that before his death, he was elder person, and he gave lectures in some audience, and he had scandal, and some people tried to blame him and something else. So it was way of struggle of his life. It was not very easy for him. Even then, he was very, very famous person. And of course, I think that he a kind of teacher for scholars is in sexuality in post-Soviet Union. And I like his books, and I recommended his books for students, and students love it. But of course, now if we develop queer and gender studies on academic level, we need to go more, to develop, to go after it. It was like Kon made a kind of basic for it, and now we need to develop this situation.
Thank you.